Camp Pendleton, California. This is the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, cycling's newest problem is that it's too fast. Races are too fast, riders are too fast on open roads. What's going on and what can be done about it?
We've also got bad news from Canada, and no, it's not related to winter. A new King Kong and why bike lanes make roads safer for all road users.
Oh, by the way, if you are wondering about this table, stay tuned to the end and we will let you in on the secret. When we say table, that would be a...
I don't know where to put my arms.
I mean, it's not really a table, is it?
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Strava have just thrown a grenade into the fitness data sector by essentially banning third parties from analysing users' data.
Yeah, so according to The Oracle, aka DC Rainmaker, it'll create issues for countless apps, including some really big ones like TrainerRoad, Exert and VeloViewer, to name but three. Now, it does seem like a strange move for the company who is kind of at the cornerstone of the fitness data industry, if there is such a thing. I just wonder whether there's something else going on here. It's been so rushed through, it seems like a bit of an own goal for Strava. Is there some kind of like major data privacy thing that's just been uncovered?
Well, watch this space. We also learned this week that a man has been sentenced for stealing $100,000 worth of bikes off Lance Armstrong, including, weirdly, a 15-year-old Trek Madone with SRAM Red Mechanical that was valued at 50 grand.
Yeah, does seem quite pricey, doesn't it, for a 15-year-old bike? Maybe it had a nice paint job?
Maybe. Now, Lance used to ride pretty fast back in the day.
And we know why.
We do. The last Tour de France he won. Can we say that?
Well, I don't think anyone knows, actually, because no one knows who won that race. But... I mean, I guess we do know that Lance didn't win that race.
Okay, the tour that he was present at, 2005.
I think we are safe saying the tour that he was present at in 2005,
good.
Yeah.
Anyway, 2005, it's complicated. It was the third fastest Tour de France in history. However, the general trend in speeds for Tour de France and other races too is only going up.
It is indeed, yeah. Let us remind you that this year's men's Paris-Roubaix, Mathieu van der Poel averaged 47.8 kilometres per hour.
A race that is entirely flat, but with 50 kilometres or so on the roughest cobbles you've ever seen. It's utterly bonkers, and the speeds being hit are so fast that race organisers are raising the alarm because they say it's too dangerous.
They do, yeah. So the director of the Tour de France, Christian Prudhomme, was addressing the Association of Race Organisers just last week and said that part of the issue of bigger and more serious crashes in pro racing, beyond, he says, the behaviour of the athletes and the work of the organisers, is that riders are going too fast. The faster they go, he says, the greater the risk and the more they endanger themselves and others.
His point was not just about the riders, but about the travelling motorcade that goes with them to try and ensure their safety and the safety of spectators too. He says that speeds are now so high, the cars and the motorcycles are on the limits as well. There's like no margin for error and a big crash is imminent.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild to think, isn't it, that cars can't keep up with the pro peloton.
Yeah.
But it does sort of raise a tricky question, right? Because it is a bike race. The idea is to go as fast as possible, and the winner will be the fastest rider. So what do we do?
And what's also a problem is that the issue is not just confined to racing, but cycling on public roads as well. We know there is a culture war going on against cyclists and fast cycling in general. Wearing Lycra, because somehow that's worse, seems to be really performing well for certain mainstream news outlets at the moment.
Well, it does, yeah. So here in the UK, the Telegraph newspaper leads the way with anti-cycling stories, which is weird because I'm pretty sure that they used to love cycling not so long ago. But anyway, they don't anymore. They published a heavily criticised article called "Let's Get Tough on the Scourge of Rogue Cyclists,"
which comes off the back of how cyclists are turning UK roads into death traps.
Yeah, now the first of those articles is mainly about jumping red lights, which I totally agree cyclists shouldn't do, even if the article is dangerously biased. However, the second one talks about how cyclists are going too fast and are therefore endangering other road users by using roads as a racetrack.
You've got us talking, which I guess is kind of the point of the article.
Yeah.
Are cyclists, be they racers or riders, too fast?
Well, I would like to point to my own Strava data here, Connor, okay, because I have successfully got slower in spite of ever more aero bikes and kit over the last decade. So, personally, I would like at this point to absolve myself of any responsibility.
Yeah, if anyone has seen any of my videos on GCN, I don't think they'd be suspicious of me either.
No. Although your explosion at Unbound was so big, that would have endangered any pedestrians nearby, wouldn't they?
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for reminding me.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure.
There are clearly, though, two separate issues here, although they might be linked in part by faster bikes and equipment, but perhaps in the main about attitude.
Yeah, I do agree, right? So bikes and kit are, as we've talked about before, allowing for faster speeds. But we are talking about just a couple of K an hour here, aren't we? So not in and of itself enough to make, you'd think, much of a material difference to safety.
No, as I discussed actually in that recent video about faster speeds in pro cycling, heat training, altitude training and training have all contributed to faster speeds as well, due to riders being able to sustain higher power outputs, and there will be certain parts of races that are faster as a result, which will increase the danger for the cars and motorbikes that are having to keep up.
Yeah. Is it the attitude of riders, though, that's changed as well, do you think?
Maybe. I think races being broadcast from start to finish has made everything faster. Now, you can't like chill at the back without getting in trouble for slacking. So everyone wants to be at
the front. You sound like you're
talking
from experience there, Connor.
Talking from experience.
You used to get told off for slacking at the back.
I did used to get told off for slacking at the back. It was like, yeah, Connor, off the back of the bunch. Well, basically, you either see the front of the race or the back of the race on the TV cameras. Like, you don't often see the bit in the middle. So it'd be like, you have to scurry to the middle and hide.
Could you hide in the middle
quite,
of a peloton?
Quite hard to hide when you're a giant. I think that's why I was unfairly targeted.
It probably was, mate. But, I mean, in terms of, like, safety, why does that matter?
Well, because there's no point where you can really relax because you're always seen by the TV cameras. So you're always... In some races, this doesn't apply, but it does in quite a few. So it's just this feeling of kind of stress, like move to the front, as a team move to the front, and you have this passive-aggressive teams like moving to the front together, and there's always this constant argy-bargy fight. There's not a point. Like when you get into the final week of Grand Tour, everyone does kind of relax and there's a lot less crashes. And you just don't get that in a one-day race at all. It's just the whole time.
No. Okay, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, definitely I would have thought that is true.
Oh, yeah, it does make an impact, I feel, on instance in a race.
Yeah. Okay, what else then?
I think that it's a lot to do with the infrastructure and the route a race is put down.
Okay.
So it's all about that in a way, because you can be on a... If you design the route wrong to begin with and it goes down a place which isn't going to be safe, you are going to increase the risk of a crash.
Like cobbles.
Cobbles or narrowing of roads or just coming into a town which isn't quite thought through in a sprint finish.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the Road World Championships, and we should say here, the Muriel Fuhrer tragedy is accepted from this particular statement. But the Road World Champs was used in that meeting about the race organisers as a case study for being a safe race, right? There were fewer crashes there. And the reason they gave was for the lack of race radios, which personally I disagree with. I think it could just as easily, and in fact more likely perhaps, be attributed to smaller teams, the fact that the race is a circuit that's almost exclusively barriered off from the public, and the fact that it's a tougher, more attritional race, right? So there's fewer people in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. Well, champs, they are tough. It is tough. But I don't think you can have a Tour de France comprising of 21 circuit races.
No.
Nor would anyone want to sanitise Tour of Flanders or Paris-Roubaix. So maybe race radios is the only way?
Well, short of banning aero bikes, narrow bars, aero socks, aero helmets, aero skin suits, aero glasses, aero tyres, aero wheels, aero hubs. Now, personally, I do feel like the riders can be responsible for their own safety and of those around them, where it's not a case of a race organiser being negligent, of course, all right? But I do wonder whether there's a bit of that, but that kind of is another matter, right? But there has to be something done about cars and motos not having any margin forever. doesn't it, really?
Yeah. And what about out on the open roads? This is, of course, part just down to people's perception of cycling, which we can't do much about, but 100% that's not an excuse to ride like an idiot. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't use some common sense when riding and back off in places that aren't safe to ride fast through.
Yeah, I do feel like there is an excuse, isn't there, amongst certain cyclists where it's just like, well, we're in danger from car drivers, therefore we can jump red lights, or like, you know, we're, I don't know, whatever, like saving the planet, therefore we can kind of do what we like. And I definitely disagree with that. So yeah, I don't see why it's not a case of like, you know, if you want to go absolutely batter yourself, maybe a park in London is not the place to do it. But then equally, I don't think many people actually do absolutely batter themselves in a park in London or in Central Park. I think that's, you know, probably like a bit of a construct from someone getting their knickers in a twist and writing an article on.
I think so. I think so. And I think at the end of the day, we're all people and we all just need to respect each other and obey the rules of the road. I think it's not a case of like this cyclist or that motorist. It's just a case of everyone trying to be aware of what they're doing.
Basically, don't be a
dick. Yeah, it does boil down to that.
In real life, just don't be a dick. And then hopefully that'll make things a bit better, won't it? Yeah. And then in bike racing, I mean, that is a more complicated picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is more complicated. Who knows? Maybe abandon the cavalcade. Maybe the cars just don't keep up.
Well, that is a flipping good point, actually.
Unbound style.
I heard Gerard Vroomen actually make that point a couple of years ago, and he was like, actually, it would make bikes better because they would have to be more reliable. Like, you know, if you know that you're not going to get a spare wheel, you could easily use, you know, tyres that wouldn't puncture, right?
Well, there you go. Maybe we just go self-supported. Longer days.
Well, there's a thought. Right, okay, get involved in the comment section down below. A lot discussed here, right? We've got two separate topics. Are they linked? Potentially. How do we make things safer on the open roads? But then, yeah, how do we make things safer in races? Do riders go unsupported? I don't know how we film them.
That is, yeah.
Self-shot on GoPros?
Maybe I shouldn't be put entirely in charge. Self-shot on GoPros, that's an idea.
No, not a self-shot on GoPros.
Give them tents.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, starting with our Canadian friends, who we know from all of your comments are pretty concerned with Ontario Premier Doug Ford and his anti-cycling rhetoric. This comes mainly after Ford announced plans to rip up recently installed cycling infrastructure in Toronto because it's causing too much traffic.
Bonkers. Yeah, bonkers. Not least because it's going to cost $34 million to do so. Now, it's gaining some serious opposition in Canada, and rightly so. It appears there is no evidence or data to back up the claim that congestion has increased in the city because of these bike lanes.
Imagine ripping up perfectly good cycling infrastructure and paying to do so. It's a move which many are claiming is wholly political by stoking the cycling culture wars to garner support from somewhere in society. The stats don't lie though, Doug. A 3 metre wide bike lane can move up to 6,500 people per hour compared to 700 to 1,100 people in a car per hour.
I mean, I guess the argument is if there aren't 6,500 people using that bike lane per hour.
Yeah, but if we encourage people to get on their bikes.
Well, I mean, I agree with you, right? But anyway, now, what is crazier is the fact that the Ontario Premier has brought out legislation which would prevent cyclists or their families from suing the government if they're killed on a road that's had a bike lane removed. Now, six cyclists have already tragically died on Toronto's roads this year already. And removing something that increases cyclist safety is not a good step. But to then try and absolve yourself responsibility is just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that, like...
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy what's happening there. And hopefully the people of Canada and Toronto can push back against this and make those in charge see some form of sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Now, moving on to some racing news and over to the Track Champions League. It was the first time that ex-Aussie Olympian Matt Richardson... no relation, was seen competing in a GB jersey following his nationality swap post-Paris.
No relation. I don't think anyone would have ever thought you're related, given his pedigree, and in sprinting, no less.
Why, mate? Easy target.
What relation did you think people, you know, would have assumed you were?
I don't know, like, cool older brother, maybe like hip young uncle or something?
You're old enough to be his dad. You're old enough to be his dad.
All right, okay. Sorry. Easy.
Anyway, Richardson, the good one, has caused a real stir in the track world. Sorry, sorry. He has caused a stir in the track world, actually. The Australian cycling attempting to get him barred from competition due to that transfer.
Yeah, so legally, they couldn't manage to bar him. So instead, they've given him a lifetime ban from representing Australia. Which, considering that appears to be Richardson's aim in the first place, I can't imagine him being too bothered. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he might want to go back for a good flat white at some point.
I don't think they're banning him from Australia, are they? Just from being Australian. I don't know. Maybe they are, yeah.
Either way, the man got off to a good start, winning both races on the night to lead the overall sprint category for the Champions League with maximum points.
Yeah.
Well.
Now, moving on, Vincenzo Nibali just lost his Strava record for the Mortirolo. Yes, amateur cyclist Jack Burke has just wiped a whopping 1:07 off the best time for that infamous Italian climb, beating the likes of Helmoser and Il Bandito in the process. So his time, 43:45, which I guess is probably fairly meaningless unless you've ridden up the Mortirolo, but that is mighty fast, isn't it? And it's certainly the fastest recorded time since 1999, before the internet was like... I mean, the internet was around in 1999, wasn't it? But, you know, like...
It was pretty Strava,
anyway.
Yeah. Burke also went across the Stelvio and took that record too, and has hinted that he has Pogacar's Madone record in his sights too.
Good luck. Yeah. No, Canadian Burke has ridden for lower-level teams in the past, including Jelly Belly, which many of you might remember. They're pretty iconic. And he's using this spree of com hunting to try and gain a pro contract for next year, he says.
Has worked for Jonas.
It has indeed, yeah. I can't help but think, though, like, I mean, it did work for Jonas Vingegaard, right? But if you've already been in races and you haven't quite performed as well as your Strava stats suggest, I mean, the races are where it matters, right? So would you not get actual results rather than just like a one hit? I don't know. Anyway, right. Dan and I have been talking about the battle for brains in World Tour teams, right? So there's news from Ineos, which is that they have bolstered their squad of brains with Mehdi Cordi, formerly the head coach at Danish Cycling, and he's now going to be the head of performance support and innovation, thanks to Simon on Instagram. Give me that tip off.
Will he be given the freedom? That seems to be the question.
Well, it does, doesn't it? Now, away from racing now, and we spotted this study published in the Journal for Urban Mobility.
Yeah.
One of our favourites. That found that bike lanes actually make roads safer, not just for cyclists, but for pedestrians and drivers alike.
Yep, painted and protected bike lanes reduced car speeds overall and lowered drivers' maximum speed too. Headline stats from the study: car average speeds reduced by 21% due to bike lane barriers, and cars travelling parallel to a bike lane reduced speed by 8%.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, the team from Rutgers University used a junction with temporary bike lanes in New Jersey for their findings, which are pretty interesting, I think, aren't they? And it does highlight how bike lanes can make us all safer, not just those of us who use them. But, I mean, I suppose if you're wrapped inside a ton of metal, you probably don't give a crap, do you really?
No. Imagine.
Anyway,
sticking with traffic now, and fun stat for you.
A fun traffic stat.
Fun traffic stat.
Okay.
Can I get another woohoo? Every 30 years, the streets of Holland have to be ripped up for pipes and wires for electric sewage and communications to be replaced. I actually didn't know.
As in literally,
yeah.
Every 30 years, yeah. A street gets ripped up.
According to what I was reading, they have to be all ripped up and replaced. Just go in there. But it does mean specific elements of road design in the country, famous for being great at road design, can be rethought. Which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah.
Check this out, which we spotted on bicycledutch.wordpress, an improved bike lane.
Okay, so, I mean, it looks like the bike lane that we all dream of, doesn't it, really?
It does, yeah.
No traffic. There's a bike island in the middle.
Yeah.
So
both directions are separated.
There you go, yeah. Smooth surface, no speed bumps, and a safer, proper crossing for pedestrians as well. I mean, Amsterdam streets are constantly evolving, aren't they? And for the better. A lesson everyone wants to take back to their own countries and cities, don't they, really?
Yeah, for sure. Last up now, though, and some good news, kind of. We often feel that dangerous car drivers escape justice, but a man here in the UK has been sentenced to 8 years and 9 months in prison for causing death by dangerous driving after he killed a 12-year-old cycling across a road, and the car that he was driving was moving at 62 mile an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone.
Yeah. I mean, it's a horrible story, right? But we did think it was worth mentioning, just as a reminder, that the law does have cyclists' backs, doesn't it? Even if sometimes it feels like not enough is done or not enough can be done. But anyway, stuff is being done. So, yeah, we thought it was kind of...
Justice.
Mildly reassuring, yeah.
Right, it's time for hack/bodge, where you guys send us in your submissions of either a hack or a bodge on a bike that you may have seen, and we decide if it is a hack or a bodge.
We do indeed. Yeah, good summary there, Connor. The first one was sent in by Sven Lotus, a homemade derailleur spotted in Sudan this year. That is utterly remarkable, isn't it? So we've got two bits of wood to act as the sort of parallelogram bit, and then a nice-looking jockey wheel there, which actually I think is a freewheel, and it appears to be held in place with a bottle top.
And some nails.
Yeah. That's wild, isn't it? You know what? I bet that works like a charm as well. Probably not very good at shifting.
You know what? It's not shifted anywhere, that. I mean, unless you kind of use an extra nail and like it pushes across.
I don't think that's got a parallelogram somehow. Anyway, that's wicked, isn't it? What an amazing way to keep a bike on the road.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that. I think for me, this is like the ultimate bodge, but in a good way. It's a bodge that works, but that is essentially a hack, isn't it?
It kind of is a hack, yeah.
Justified a hack. So it's a hack.
It's a hack. Yeah, totally. Yeah. All right, thanks. And what's next, Connor?
So this has been sent in by Toronto 165. Very Canadian-themed show this week, isn't
it?
It
is, yeah.
No longer searching for bike keys as a courier, dollar store parkour, bracelet, a couple of keychains, and a few links from an old bike chain. And jobs are good.
So hang on a minute. So this is like a bracelet for your wrist, and then the bike chain is on the bike key, the D-lock key, is on a dangly chain that's presumably long enough to allow you to put it in your fingers to then turn your lock. So your key's always in the right place. I mean...
It's a good idea.
I mean, technically, it is a good idea. And I suppose if, as a courier, you are locking and unlocking your bike like countless times a day, I mean, I suppose that's got to be a hack, right?
But yeah.
I feel like it might be sort of overkill for normal life.
For normal life, I think it's overkill. But for a courier, it's unlock and lock him. It's a good idea.
All right, we're going to say hack then for Toronto 165?
Yeah, hack.
All right then. Schemes 1971 said, my wife talked me into buying the bike I never thought I would have after suffering a shift lever failure on my 14-year-old Trek Madon that I could have repaired. I got a sweet deal on a 2022 Madon SL7 through the Trek Red Barn Refresh Program, which is, basically Trek selling secondhand bikes, which I approve of. Anyway, says the bike had some blemishes on that I was completely aware of because of Trek's transparency via mechanics notes about the bike. Again, good marks. The scuff that bothered me the most was the one on the forks, so I used some leftover 3M vinyl wrap in carbon fibre black to conceal the blemish, and as a bonus, it matches the wheel set. Do you know what? I think that's cool. Like, as in, I think that looks like intentional and cool, doesn't it?
It's a very good cover-up. It is a very good cover-up. Very, very defined.
Yeah, nice work there. I think,
I think we can hack that.
I think we can hack that. Yeah, that's wicked.
Right then, last up, Lee Wilson. So this is pretty, this is cool. I like this. I like it a lot. So I use this outfit to transport the kids back anywhere from school after school run, as there isn't anywhere to leave their bikes at school. Sorry, transport the kids' bikes, not the kids as well. the rear bike is towed along with a fork mount attached to a rack, and the bungees to the pedal and seat give enough resistance to not fall over, even during low-speed type manoeuvring. The front bike is transported on a car bike rack, which is secured to the basket. And the middle bike is a 23-kilogram ex-Royal Mail Pashley Mail Star that was refurbed by the Elephant Bike Project. Extreme weight of the bike means the whole contraption is stable and rock solid on the move. It has internal gears and hub brakes, and almost maintenance-free.
Well, hang on a minute. Whole lot of detail there. Let's get back to the beginning. For our podcast listeners, what we're looking at here is a town bike, and on the back of it is a road bike attached via the fork blades to the rear of the bike. And then on the front of the bike, on a car bike rack, is another bike racked up as well. So basically, a bicycle transporting two other bicycles to and from school.
He's definitely got no heels.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? If that works, that's wicked. The thing that mainly jumps out at me is I think it's a travesty that there's nowhere secure to leave your kids' bikes at school.
Yeah.
That is bonkers and really wrong. But anyway, I...
You know what I'd do? Go with a drill to the road outside school and drill an anchor into the road.
Yeah.
Just lock it to that. Although, don't say that, I told you.
No, I was going to say, that might be quite illegal. Yeah. I fully admire this, but do you know what is awful? I don't think I could ride that bike to and from my kids' school every day. I think it would crack me.
Why?
Because it would just be so awful to ride. Do you know what I mean? I know that's awful, but like, yeah.
You get used to it, and the knowledge that you haven't had to jump in a car would be a big saviour.
Well, no, but like, so I don't drive the car. I've got a cargo bike. The kids go on that. And then I suppose I'm lucky enough when they do cycle, they've got somewhere secure to leave their bikes, right? So I don't have to have this contraption. But anyway, I admire you for your commitment to the cause.
I do too.
I think that is wicked.
I'm going to copy that rear rack.
Yeah?
When I'm on the cargo bike and I want to transport my bike.
There you go. All right. Well, in that case, then, I think you've got to give it a hack, haven't you, basically?
Yeah, hack it.
All right.
It's a hack.
Even though it does like a massive bodge. I'm just going to leave it there.
There's a lot of bungee cords as well. There's a lot of bungee cords.
There's a lot of bungee cords. Right, okay, well, let's leave it there for this week. Thank you so much for your hacks and bodges. Remember, we can't do this section without you lot, so make sure you keep submitting them. The link is in the description beneath this video, or Dan normally reads out the email address. Can you remember what it is, Isaac?
Uploader, that's what I remember.
Yeah, something about uploader. We'll put it on screen now. And anyway, yeah, I'll remember it next week.
Yeah. It's time for caption competition, where you guys potentially win a Camelback GCM water bottle. But first, you have to get a caption to a photo we've uploaded. Best caption wins. Whack it into the comments below.
Indeed, yeah. We will start with the results from last week. The winner... captioning this photo of... Oh, man, I can't remember their names
Benjamin Thomas. I remember him because I was at the hands of very, very painful performances from this man. Well, he was obviously wasn't in pain, but I was at the back.
That sounds really dodgy. I mean, I don't know what that just... Anyway, Benjamin Thomas winning against 6 Day.
Anyway, Fabian van der Bosch.
There you go.
Right, I've had no... painful experiences at the back.
Good, fantastic. Right, anyway, the winner of the caption competition is Leonard Fairground, 5937, who says, two cyclists with undoubted six appeal.
There we go.
That is good. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, brilliant, actually. That's great. So get in touch, Leonard, and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. It's not the most stable of surfaces.
It's not,
this
one, is it? You can probably see it's behind us.
Yeah, there you go. Okie doke. That we're going to give you this week is Mark Cavendish. What is that, Connor?
So he was out in Singapore at these kind of like these criteriums. I believe that's a Pokemon. I thought it was a cat.
So he's hugging a giant squishy Pokemon?
I reckon that is. It's got some Lego. I couldn't actually see what the Lego was. It looks like...
Oh, he does like Lego, doesn't he, Mark?
Yeah, it looks... Oh, it's the Singapore, big building in Singapore, the one that's got a big boat on top.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the famous one that I can't remember the name of.
No. Have you got a caption for us this week, Connor?
I'm going to go with the Manx missile, emotional at capturing that elusive 35th Pokemon.
That's not bad, mate, is it? Have you had that one in your back pocket for a while?
No.
Mulling that one over?
I must have just, walked into an extra door for him this morning and knocked something into my
divine head. Inspiration. Well, there you go. Right, if you think you can better Connor's caption, and even if you don't think you can, just stick it in the comment section down below. It makes us chuckle, and we will pick a winner next week who, as we said, will win a Camelback water bottle.
Comments of the week now, starting with last week's show. First up, George D1. I must have a good 50-50 ratio of slow and fast twitch fibres. I'm neither a sprinter nor do I perform well at long endurance rides. I'm with you, George.
Oh, that's brilliant. I like that. Now, we had arguably the best hack ever in Hack or Bodge last week, where someone had submitted a carbon fibre bike that they had made themselves, having... made their own molds and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, loads and loads of comments. Eyes on Bikes said, we need a video on the homemade carbon frame immediately. Unfortunately, whoever had submitted it hasn't then got back in touch to say, come and make a video. So anyway, whoever made that bike, please get in touch because it looks amazing. And we'll come and make a video on it because that's wicked and it deserves the airtime. So anyway, please get in touch. Thanks for all your comments. And then lastly from the show, Marv Mininger said, in Hackle Bodge, I think those circles are actually hearts, Mr. Lloyd. I don't think Dan would know one if he, you know. Anyway, but there you go. Yeah, it's true.
Right, moving on to this new Cornago will blow your mind. Love this video. It was, they got a nice time of year in Italy as well. It looked absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it?
So Go DuPont 24 said, as Alex gets into his Ferrari, we are reminded he has a spare parts drawer full of Duro spares.
Specifically Duro's cranks, I think, is the currency for which Alex is best known. That made me chuckle, that one. Joe Black said, I really like Alex. Complete geek, completely genuine, always passionate, great video. And that pretty much sums him up, actually. Although you can add in a great bike rider as well, couldn't you?
Yeah.
To that mix.
He's a good bike rider.
Yeah.
Right, is this the next step for gravel bikes? You put drop bars on a full sus.
I did,
mountain
yeah.
bike machine.
Do you know what? A lot of people, I was quite struck, a lot of people had obviously seen the thumbnail and gone straight to the comment section and hadn't watched the video because there were more than a few people seemed to think that was actually a proper bike that Orbea were going to start selling and were really irate about it. And I was like, guys, watch the video for crying out loud. Anyway, there we go. It got quite a lot of debate going, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, these are just a few of the many, many, many comments which we're very thankful that you've left under the video. Right, who's first?
Little Shop of Random 685 said, the joke has come full circle, I guess. Roadies are now XC racers who will become trail riders, who will become enduro riders, who will then buy a road bike to get in shape and round Ramico.
Well, I kind of agree slightly, but I think roadies will become gravel riders, will become XC racers, who might become trail riders, but they'll never become enduro riders because that's for lazy people.
Okay. I just wouldn't become Shot an enduro fired. Rider because I'm too scared.
Well, yeah, there might be a bit of that as well, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, Jeskly 11 said, not even in a dream did I think that I would ever see Dylan Johnson on GCN. So, it was great. We bumped into him at the Ruler show, and he was very nice, stopped and had a chat with us. So it was great to get his input on that. And then Joe Oaken said, revolutionary. I can't wait to see what's next. Flat handlebars? It's got to be said, for my money, right, Connor?
Yeah.
The future of gravel bikes, some gravel bikes anyway, is going to be basically like a hardtail from about 4 years ago. So still with quite steep, twitchy handling. And then narrow handlebars. Like, not ridiculously narrow, but I'm talking like 640 millimetre wide. Because then, you know, yeah, I think that is really, really good all-round bike.
You get a bit of everything.
You get a bit of everything. So, yeah, that's where my money's going.
Some of these gravel courses are getting pretty rough.
Yeah.
And if you're doing a long one, it feels rougher at the end when you're tired. So.
Totally, yeah.
Right, next up, is this the world's fastest group ride? Hank, we sent him up north to the Donny Chain Gang, which I've heard loads about. I haven't actually been on it myself. I'd love to give it a try. Heard it's one of the hardest rides going. Andy Simmons wrote this. I'm going to try and read the quote in this comment.
Oh, my God.
I do love...
Connor's accents are notorious. Go on, mate, give it a go.
I'm going to try and do it in a Yorkshire accent. My mum... It's like... It's like a parody of the four Yorkshiremen. I'm going to lose it. No, go on, let's get it, Connor. It's like a parody of the four Yorkshiremen sketch put on bikes. It's Reet Gold.
I mean, that wasn't a great start, mate.
You can just come back to it and I'll stop laughing. All right, here we go. It's Reet Gold, but only Southern... I'm not doing this right, am I? It's Reet Gold, but only Southern buses wear gloves. Isn't that so, Arkwright? Aye, my fingers just dropped off with frostbite. I think I need to just stop.
Well, where's Ollie Bridgewood when you need him? It's right, Cole, but only Southern wusses wear gloves. Isn't that so, Arkwright? Aye, my fingers just dropped off with frostbite, but I didn't stop to pick it up. Not on Donny Chain.
That is good.
Didn't spend 5 years at Sheffield for no reason. Anyway, there will be a lot of Southern Yorkshire people clearly irate.
Yeah, apologies, everyone. Apologies, just a bit of fun.
Yeah. anyway, and then John Strack said, our local group ride, also in a similar neck of the woods, actually, Grimsby, was often harder than the races we used to do. It's a great way to get fit. I've ridden with Russ Downing a time or two as well. Top bloke. And yeah, Russ was a top bloke. He's kicked my ass in so many races.
Good sport, Russ. He's looked after me many a time.
Yeah.
Right then, Sire. That is pretty much it. What's coming up this week?
What is coming up this week? On Thursday, you guys have been helping out with this one, actually, for the last few weeks. Could I survive the hardest workouts on Zwift? So, viewers, thank you for suggesting the hardest workouts. I want to say thank you. Thank you for suggesting the hardest workouts. I've had loads of people joining me on group workouts as well on Zwift, which has been wicked. Anyway, the video is coming out on Thursday. Did I survive? And also, actually, I learned quite a bit of stuff on there. Okay, so there's a few handy tips. Nothing like doing four ridiculously hard training sessions in 1 week to teach you a thing or two, but there we go. And then on Saturday, this is one we've all been really looking forward to. So over the last year, Dan has, of course, been getting back to health and fitness. We've seen loads of updates, haven't we, from him. This is the final vid where he basically finds out whether or not he has got fitter and healthier.
Yeah.
It's going to be super cool, that one, so make sure you check it out. And then on Sunday, I was gutted. Hank caught up with the gladiator giant for another vid. This time, let loose from the velodrome. They went out and about and tried to tackle a killer climb. Can giant do a killer climb?
Yeah.
We'll find out.
I've seen some photos of this and it looks like they had a bit of fun.
It does.
So yeah. Stay tuned.
There we go. Right, that is all for the GCN show this week. Oh, apart from the table. Table.
I don't know how much you've noticed of it.
Well, a lot, actually. Basically, hopefully, we should have something exciting to show you next week. And it is not just a new table, is it? So, stay tuned next week. And, hopefully, could be a case of ta-da!
Yep.
There you go. Anyway, thanks for watching this time. And, we'll see you next week.